Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. We just got home from Indianapolis and the 110th running of the Indy 500 on Thursday, so I've got some good stories and some recap on what happened on that race. Of course, it is the greatest Sunday ever in motorsports because you have NASCAR, IndyCar, and Formula One all running on the same weekend. So we'll talk about that. Definitely we'll talk a little bit more about some of the gas prices we experienced coming across America. I can tell you this, Texas and Oklahoma, they definitely have gas prices figured out because they are nothing like what they are here in Arizona. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on with a little car talk and we'll sum up the trip. All right, we'll stand by. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, a little recap from another adventure to Indiana and the Indy 500. For those of you who don't know, I have been going to the Indianapolis 500 since 1969. I was 10 years old when I went to my first race. I haven't been to every Indy 500 since then, but I'm going to bet I've been to probably 80% of those races between 69 and today. It's a big family event for us, and the race starts for us by getting up at 3 a.m. Yes, 3 a.m. in the morning, which actually would be midnight Arizona time at this time of the year. We get up and meet the family, and we caravan from the north side of Indianapolis down to Speedway, where the Speedway Indiana, where the track actually lives. And we are in our parking spot on 16th Street. The Speedway is located at 16th and Georgetown. We are on 16th Street, backed up to the fence line to watch the day start. At 6 a.m. the cannon shot goes, and then there's a big fireworks show to let everybody know that the track is officially open. We spend our morning having breakfast and conversations, doing our annual pool where everybody throws in $10 and you get to pull a name out of a hat. I have won this pool before. This year I did not win the pool. I had Connor Daly, which was one of the drivers that I was really hoping would win the race, but he did not. But I just had a wonderful time, and it's a long day. We had some rain. We had some delays. One of the things that's so great about the Indianapolis 500 is it's Memorial Day, and we are celebrating our troops and those who have given their lives for the sanctity and the keeping our country safe. Taps is played. 350,000 people go dead, still, quiet during the time period where the bugler is playing Taps. Of course, we are flyovers with jets, helicopters, and of course, back home again in Indiana is sung. Jim Nabors sang it so for many, many years, and it still brings a tear to my eye. The race was action-packed, and I'm actually going to go to an article that was written in for an ESPN about the winning of this year's 110th Indy 500. It was written by Ryan McGee, and he's writing for ESPN. And it says, in the blink of an eye, Rosenquist's closest ever Indy 500 rewrites his legacy in motorsports. Speedway, Indiana. All week at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, it felt just a little bit off. Not awful, not wrong, not even all the rain, just like slightly dancing out of step. That was the chatter on Sunday's pre-race skid. Everyone felt the axis was just a bit askew. Now, the week started with the scary crosswind crash that cracked the wrist of Alexander Rossi. NASCAR legend Kyle Busch unexpectedly died on Thursday, casting a darkness over the track where he won a pair of Brickyard 400s in NASCAR. And then the looming constant threat of rain clouds and actual darkness that came over the weekend. Quote, in my experience, this was one where everybody felt it was just a little bit off. Like those Mays where something happens good, something epic, and something right at the end, Graham Rahal said it on the eve of the 2026 Indy 500, the 110th running and his 19th Indy 500. The questions are, who will make it happen and who will it be? The answer? Well, a driver who had never won an oval race. After hitting the reset button on a wonky race week, it was the closest finish ever, a dogfight at the Indy 500. I still can't believe it. Can you? Can they? Exclaimed Felix Rosenquist as he was in the winner's circle, draped with the winner's wreath around his neck, his fire suit still soaked with milk as the crowd fired off of him. If you don't know it, you can't believe it. I still can't believe it. With one trip down the front straightaway remaining, the final 1,650 feet of the Indianapolis 500 race, who was going to be second? Desperately trying to find a place to pass the leader, David Malukas. He wove his machine left and to the right to try to break the aerodynamic draft of the pack of cars that was chasing him. Earlier he was in the lead, feathering the throttle just ahead of the Honda to make sure you had enough fuel to drop the hammer and take the lead. You only have a late caution that cost him a lead and sticking to the precarious one-lap shootout, the finish that cost him the lead and then mounted a charge against the man, the kid, the 24-year-old David Malukas, who held the lead and flashed by that kid as they crossed the storied yard of bricks beneath the checkered flag. The final margin of victory, 0.02 of a second, the closest finish in the 110 editions of the greatest spectacle in racing, the literal speed of a blink of an eye. Now, scientists say it takes 0.02 for a second for our brain to visually react to a stimuli. Like, let's say, seeing a 750-horsepower missile with a man eye-blinking his way past a grandstand filled with, maybe 300,000 people. Well, this was my eighth start in the Indy 500, and it's been something different this month versus other months. Rosenquist acknowledged after working his way through the Felix, Felix, Felix chanting crowd. There were so many people approaching me this month and said, "This is your year." I think it's because I've had a chance before. He finished fourth in 2022 and a year ago. And they also know my story. They can relate to it. Well, that's another tale. But less than 3 years ago, I left believing that a once promising IndyCar career was on the blocks. Now, he broke into, and this is Rosenquist, he broke into IndyCar with superpower team Chip Ganassi in 2019 and won Rookie of the Year. Following season, he earned a win on the twists and turns of Road America. Then he moved to another front-running team, Arrow McLaren. But after three winless seasons, he was set adrift. He was added to Meyer Shank Racing, a respected but decidedly second-tier team. Like Rosenquist, held only one IndyCar win. But that lone victory also came in the biggest race, with Elio Castroneves behind the wheel and winning his fourth Indy 500. "Well, they gave me a second chance," Rosenquist said on Sunday evening, sitting next to his team owner, Michael Shank. "They were fast at Indy, and I figured I had to be fast at Indy." So there it was, the whole metaphor I found during that dash off of Turn 4 on Sunday afternoon. The visual stimuli of the once scrappy but now surging team, driven by a 34-year-old who had seemingly failed to fulfill his potential, chasing down the car of Team Penske, the undisputed king of this place, with 20 wins in Indy 500, and owned by the man who actually owns the speedway itself. He wheeled by David Malukas, as it was viewed by the future, who is viewed as the future pillar of IndyCar racing at Team Penske. The same kind of buzz that swirled around Rosenquist, his Rookie of the Year. Well, this place can be downright mean. It doesn't care who you are. Just look at our day, Shank said, referring to the fact that their cars were running 1 and 2 when a late caution shuffled the deck and their chances. I mean, look at poor Malukas. He's such a great kid. A kid who was left weeping live on television, sitting on the pit wall after losing immortality in that blink of an eye. He was embraced by Marco Andretti, who lost in 2006 by the nearly identical fashion, beat by Sam Hornish by 0.06 of a second, the fourth closest finish in the Indy 500. Quote, "I gave 150%. I nearly crashed on every lap. And I get P2? I just can't believe it," Malukas said, as the crowd heard his interview over the loudspeakers. They roared with his support as everyone around him gave him a hug. Those cheers spiked. He said, "Well, next year, I'm going to give it 160%. Perhaps that will be enough. Perhaps it won't. But if Malukas is seeking proof, He only needs to look over at the race car and the driver that flashed by him to the right. But you know what, Michael Shank said? This place doesn't care who you are when it comes to the good stuff, too. As much of a fan, it can make you hurt and also reward you with the greatest feeling of your life. This feeling right here, right now. Rosenquist heard his boss overhead and interjected, but only if you earn it. Other highlights from the 500, or I would say lowlights possibly. So Catherine Legg, who was hoping to run the both complete double, run the Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600, was the second car out of the race after she was caught up in a crash in turn two with Ryan Hunter-Reay. A disappointing finish to what would look like could be a really good run for her. One of the cars that I had in our pool was Joseph Newgarden, and Joseph Newgarden is a two-time Indy 500 champ. And in 2024, I was really hoping Pato O'Ward for McLaren could win, but I had Joseph Newgarden in the pool. Of course, I'm screaming for Pato as he's racing against Joseph for the win in 2024, and he does not win. So my driver doesn't win, but I did win the pool, so that was kind of a good consolation. Well, this year I felt pretty confident because I had Joseph Newgarden again, and he'd been good in practice. Didn't qualify great, but had been good in practice. And then right in front of us, late in the race, Joseph Newgarden crashes. And it's kind of set this whole bar moving forward, and that's how this whole situation came with Felix Rosenquist beating David Malukas in the closest finish in the IndyCar history of the 500. So Rosenquist finishes first, David Malukas second, Scott McLaughlin finished third, which is great because last year he crashed out on the first on the warm-up lap. My boy Pato O'Ward in fourth, Marcus Armstrong in fifth. A nice run by Rinus VK in sixth. Alex Palou, who is the championship leader, is in seventh. Santino Ferrucci finished in eighth. I believe that's his sixth or seventh consistent top ten. Romain Grosjean in ninth, and two-time winner of the Indy 500, Takuma Sato finished in 10th. Nolan Siegel finished up in 11th, which is really great because his ride is definitely on the line this year based off his performance, so he needed a good finish. And Connor Daly finished in 12th. So, once again, another great Indy 500 with our friends and our families, celebrating our troops, flyovers, helicopters, a little bit of a rainy day, a little short delay for rain, but it wasn't hot, and everybody had a great time. And once again, looking forward to heading back next year for the 111th running of the Indianapolis 500. One of the other big races in the United States for that weekend, and it's the Coca-Cola 600, and the headline reads, Suarez wins emotional rain-shortened Coca-Cola 600. Well, at the driver's meeting before Sunday's Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway, NASCAR's Senior Vice President of Competition, Elton Sawyer, had some parting words for the NASCAR Cup Series driver. Let's put on a race that Kyle would be proud of, Sawyer said, referring to the two-time series champion and a certain Hall of Famer of Kyle Busch, who passed away on Thursday after a sudden and brief illness. The drivers took those words seriously and put on a quality show that ended with an improbable victory, with Daniel Suarez claiming his third victory of his career when NASCAR called the event 27 short laps short of his scheduled finish as rain drenched the track. The win was especially poignant for Suarez, who had received repeated encouragement and advice from Kyle Busch after coming from his native Mexico launching his NASCAR career. Quote, this means a lot, Suarez said of his victory. I mean, this really means a lot. I've been saying this is my favorite race of the year, and to have our friends and family here every year, and, well, we got it done. It's been a very tough week. Kyle was a very special man. This one is for Kyle. For Kyle, Samantha, Brexton, Lennox, and his entire family. Definitely one special favor because of Kyle. This win is for him. If it wasn't for Kyle, I wasn't going to be an Xfinity champion, and I wasn't going to have a shot at the Cup Series. This win is for him, and it's unbelievable. Suarez crew chief Ryan Sparks made the call that actually won the race with final pit stops under a lightning cause by taking two right side tires only. Suarez gained 13 positions on pit road and held the green on lap 360. Rain slowed on lap 361, and Suarez was barely in the lead over Christopher Bell and Denny Hamlin. from a strong push. On the final restart, Suarez lined up on the inside with Bell on the outside, and a push from Larson helped bear Suarez clear Bell, and immediately after that first restart, I knew I could get clear. Then the rain came, and the rain was a favor for Daniel Suarez, but it was a great call by his crew chief. So Daniel Suarez paying homage to Kyle Busch as a person who helped get his career launched here in the United States. Christopher Bell finished in second, Denny Hamlin in third, Tyler Reddick finished in fourth, and rounding out the top five was Kyle Larson. Interesting enough, even though Catherine Legg crashed out early in the Indy 500 and finished in 32nd, she was able to get to Charlotte and complete the second part of the double, running both races. And she ran, she finished in 31st position in this race out of 43 cars and was running at the end of the race. So congratulations to Catherine Legg. The third of the big races, and this one is actually up in Canada this year. Normally Formula One runs in Monaco, but they moved that date to later in June. But now they have the Formula One race in Canada, the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal. And Kimi Antonelli continues to win, the young phenom from the team of Mercedes-Benz, finished in first. Lewis Hamilton gets on the podium finally, with Ferrari finishes in second, and Max Verstappen finished in third. Charles Leclerc in fourth, and rounding out the top five was Isaac Hadja. So a great, great win for Kimi Antonelli. His teammate George Russell was on the pole, but had an engine failure, and he was able to inherit the lead. So Kimi Antonelli, the young 19-year-old phenom, looking like he could potentially be a Formula One world champion this year. Motorsports on tap for this weekend still. The IndyCar race is actually on right now, and that is on Fox broadcast. The NASCAR race, which is in Nashville, is going to be on Prime and HBO Max, and that is starting at noon today. And we also, and then that's it. No Formula One. Oh, excuse me. There is drag racing on with NHRA, and that starts at noon as well, and that is on Fox and Fox Sports 1. If you like some drag racing, and then I'll have results for NASCAR and IndyCar. IndyCar is in Detroit, and we have, of course, Alex Palou once again on the pole. And what's interesting is that you have a Honda on the front, two Hondas on the front row, with also a Will Power starting in second position in Detroit, the home of Chevrolet. So I'll have those results for you next weekend. Opportunity to go to an IndyCar race in Washington, D.C., and fans can request tickets for the Freedom 100 GP, and that started at noon yesterday. While anticipation of building for the first IndyCar race on the streets of Washington, D.C. around the National Mall on August 22nd and 23rd, fans can request general admission tickets for the Freedom 250. How you do that? It's a cornerstone event of the nationwide celebration of America's 250th birthday. You can visit the official Freedom 250 Grand Prix Ticketmaster portal to submit a request for free general admission tickets. The ticket request window will remain open through Sunday, June 7th. Following the closing of that period, entries will be selected from a random drawing. And if you want more information on that, you can visit freedom250gp.com. So that'll be pretty interesting to see IndyCars racing on the streets of Washington, D.C., a 1.7-mile, 7-turn Grand Prix circuit that will run through the city. And the street circuit will feature almost a half-mile run down a Pennsylvania Avenue framed by the famed Washington Monument and the U.S. Capitol. And, of course, that race will be on Fox Broadcast TV. Some weird and unusual news. The headline reads, Brazilian courts order the restoration of Fordlandia, Henry Ford's Amazon ghost town. São Paulo, Brazil. A court in the northern Brazil state of Pará has ruled that both federal and local officials must act to restore and preserve Fordlandia, a city established nearly a century ago by U.S. industrialist Henry Ford deep in the Amazon rainforest. Prosecutors said Friday that the decision makes a significant milestone in its heritage site. Fordlandia is now a ghost town in the district city of Aveiro. built in 1927 in Para by the Ford Motor Company as a rubber-tapping metropolis intended to secure a steady supply of natural rubber for tires. Designed to resemble an American suburb, it was once the third largest settlement in the Amazon region. However, disease ravaged the rubber tree plantation, leading to its abandonment in 1945. The Brazilian state acquired the site. In 2015, federal prosecutors in Para sued the country's Ifana Architectural Heritage Agency and the city for failing to preserve Fordlandia, and they also demanded that the city grant the city protected status. Fordlandia is a landmark chapter in the history of Brazil and global industry, a project that was an American effort to challenge the British monopoly in the rubber industry, bringing cutting-edge infrastructure on hospital, running water, electricity, and a movie theater to the heart of the Amazon in the 1920s. Despite the end of its commercial adventure, officials emphasize that the district remains an important part of Brazil's national memory and should be preserved for future generations. 2 weeks ago, a judge ordered both federal and local authorities to restore Fordlandia, a decision that came after a decade of legal proceedings. Although the district isn't officially recognized as a heritage site, the court found that it possesses historical, cultural, and architectural significance, which the Brazilian Constitution's mandate must be protected. So I had heard about this place, and I'm going to do a little bit of a deeper dive to see if I can find some more information about it. But Brazilian government is going to restore and keep Fordlandia, a huge major site in Brazil, protected. Prices with our friends over at AAA. As my wife Janine and I and our little dog Brandy worked across the United States, we found a lot of different gas prices, as we know. So here in Arizona right now, our average gas price is $4.68. As we headed across New Mexico, $4.13. Texas, $3.82. Oklahoma, $3.82 as well. Then we cut through Missouri, which was $4 a gallon. Got to Illinois, $4.77. And in Indiana, $3.69. Now, one of the reasons the Indiana gas prices are less expensive is because the governor of Indiana decided to suspend the gasoline taxes for a 30-day time period from May 6th through June 6th. So that was a big deal. In fact, my cousins who came in from Minnesota, their gas prices in Minnesota are $4.15, and they were excited about filling up on what they called some cheap Indiana gas. So that's the story. We had a great time as we crossed the country, and we definitely found that Oklahoma and Texas were some of the best gas prices, and of course, Indiana as well. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Arizona. Well, it's nice to see some gas prices under $4 in our state. In Littlefield, Arizona, the TA Express, $3.74. The Maverick Station in that same town, $3.91. And you get to Tucson, $4.09 at the Sunoco station. The Outpost in Golden Valley, and I got to let you know, I'm not sure where Golden Valley is at $4.14. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. Well, a quick Google search determined that Golden Valley is up by Bullhead City. So it's a suburb of Bullhead City. All right, here in Metro Phoenix, yeah, nothing even close to $3 and et cetera. The least expensive gas in the metro is at Sam's Club, both Sam's Club's locations in Gilbert and in Tempe at $4.14. The Walmart location on Baseline in Mesa at $4.18. The Marathon Station on Apache Trail is at $4.19. The Costco on Arizona Avenue in Gilbert is at $4.19. The Quick Trip on Arizona Avenue, right in the same neighborhood, $4.19. The Walmart fuel station on 35th Avenue is at $4.22. And then the Quick Trips in Mesa on Mesa Drive and the one on Baseline in Phoenix is at $4.22 and $4.25 respectively. So gas prices still, right now, if you find gas less than $4.50 in this town, that's going to be a pretty decent price. Well, we've reached that time of the show, time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, my 2015 Nissan Versa was due for its first transmission maintenance at 85,000 miles. There were no problems with it, but I changed the fluid and found little pieces of metal and a partial piece of what looks like a plastic clamp in there. I finished the job, closed up everything, and drove the car for a couple hours. I didn't notice anything wrong, but then I've decided not to drive it anymore until I find out if I should replace the transmission. Any advice? And that's from Eric. Well, have you seen those signs in the dealership that says customers are not permitted past this point? Well, that's why, Eric. There are some things that car owners really shouldn't see. Well, at least there's no costume jewelry or wristwatches in there. That's good. Now, generally speaking, it is not uncommon to find some kind of metal grit or shavings in transmission fluid. This is from wear and tear over time, the time of the internal components. Now, if you find metal chunks or pieces that you can actually pick up with your fingers, well, that's a troubling sign. And in fact, your Versa has had significant problems with its CVT transmission. They've been so problematic that there was a class action lawsuit that forced Nissan to extend the transmission's warranty to, wait, how many miles do you have on this car? 85? Well, the warranty was extended to 84. And no kidding. So the good news is, by changing the transmission fluid and getting all that stuff out of there, you have definitely extended the life of your transmission. So whatever happens during its life. So good for you. In fact, many owners of 2015 Versas are changing the transmission fluid every 30,000 miles to protect the clutches and the belts that are now being recommended. But if it's working well, Eric, you can either cross your fingers and commit to it, or put it in your mind and plan to change the fluid every 30,000 miles from now on. Or think about trading it before the transmission starts producing Lego-sized pieces of Samsonite luggage. Yeah, the CVT transmissions can be an issue. We have one in our Prius, but it's a Toyota, and we have not had any issues with this. And it has 137,000 miles on it after putting nearly 4,000 miles on that car to and from Indiana. And it did a great job. I think we averaged somewhere around 45 miles per gallon. And that is one of the beauties of a Prius. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for our car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday. And you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.